Welcome back to the Bitcoin Layer. I'm Nick Bhatia. Today we welcome back one of our favorite guests, Checkmate. He is an on-chain analyst, and what Checkmate does is he gives us that sense of what is going on with regards to the Bitcoin blockchain and how it's affecting price action. Check, thanks for joining us again.
G'day, Nick. Great to be back, mate.
Okay, so Check, you're on your own now. You are providing your own analysis. You have your own Substack, your own YouTube channel. I want people to go check out Check's letter and his channel if they are interested in going deep into on-chain. It's his specialty, and he's really our favorite on-chain analyst. We trust his analysis here. So we want to start with a little bit of a 101 for people, Check. Before we get a little bit into it, I've done my realized price video. You've done a lot of content on this. Let's start with realized price because it's so important. We want to give people an understanding, a 101 of what realized price is. So I have the definition that you start with in your letter, in your latest letter. The realized cap comes from the concept of price stamping, where we value each coin or UTXO at the time when it last transacted on chain. As coins move around the network and chain's hands, they are revalued to a new cost basis, reflecting a net capital inflow or outflow. So price stamping is the technology, if you want to use that word, that underpins this metric. So give people an understanding in your own words of why price stamping is the fundamental metric to understand.
Absolutely. So as a bit of context, right, I've been looking at Bitcoin on-chain data since really 2018, and that's when the realized cap was invented by Coinmetrics. Coinmetrics in 2018, December. And here I am, whatever that is, 5-6 years later, having spent multiple years professionally, and I continue to come back to the realized cap as the most important bedrock metric to understand. It was actually the first metric that I did a educational series on YouTube way back in 2019. And my colleagues at when I was at Glassnode, a lot of them said that was like their aha moment. I've had lots of people say, oh, this is when it actually clicked as to why on-chain data is useful. So that's why I think it's a good bedrock metrics to understand. Now, when we talk about price stamping, as you said, we're essentially assigning a cost basis to every coin that moves on-chain. Now, some coins that move on-chain is useful information. We call it economical. Some isn't. But when you take a big average and you just look at every coin that's moving, a lot of the error bars kind of disappear. So it's actually a very clean signal in aggregate. Yes, individual coins have little error bars around them when they were bought, sold, transferred. But when you do the big picture average, it's very much in the middle. So the best way to think about the realized cap, it's the on-chain market cap. If you looked at the Bitcoin market, what is it, 1.4 trillion or 1.3 trillion? That's valuing Satoshi's coins at the current spot price. And it's also valuing early miner coins at the current spot price. That's not really fair because we know that that's the traditional format, but Satoshi's coins are lost. So, and they were also last moved at zero. So in many ways, we should actually be trying to measure the wealth saved in Bitcoin. So when we talk about price stamping, let's say you bought some coins back in 2019 at 10 grand. You have invested $10,000 times that coin value. Right? If you bought half a Bitcoin, that's $5,000. If you haven't moved those coins, that's still saved as $5,000. You invested $5,000 and you still hold it. Now, if you sell those coins, you transfer them to an exchange up here at $60,000, you're going to realize a profit. And somebody else has to come in with the extra money to buy that newly revalued coin. And that's why we talk about changes in the realized cap when it climbs. It's a capital inflow. Someone realized a profit, but someone else had to come in with more money to buy the same coin. Works in the other direction too. Some people buy high and they sell low. They destroy capital, and those realized losses is actually a capital outflow. And what the realized cap is doing is looking all of the realized profit and minusing all the realized loss. And you end up with the final result, which is how much capital was actually invested and saved in Bitcoin, the asset. The other final point there is, yes, a lot of coins trade around on exchanges, but there's a very different psychological decision matrix between buying and selling, particularly with algos, and actually withdrawing a coin. It's now yours in your wallet. You have to make a very conscious decision to sign it and send it back to an exchange. So it's adding that extra like psychological decision level, which I think is really important.
The Bitcoin Layer is very proud to be sponsored by River, a Bitcoin-only exchange and who we believe to be the leader in the business. Go check them out today at river.com/TBL for a special offer of up to $100 of Bitcoin for free when you go sign up. You have a lot of options when it comes to buying Bitcoin. We believe River is your best choice because they do not custody your Bitcoin on a third-party exchange. They have their own solution for storage, and they encourage you to get your coins off the exchange as soon as possible. River.com/TBL for that special offer. Yes, one way you can think about it is that the market price, or the price on the screen, is the exchange price. People would understand that. But the realized price is the custodied price. When you actually withdraw and you put it away, you've moved it on chain. And so that custody action is that cost basis. Now, check, I know that there are some people in the audience that are like, man, you guys cover this, try to redefine this every time. But the reason is we're all about the education. It does take several times to hear what realized price is for it to finally click. It was like that for me. I read a bunch of papers, articles, videos, and it wasn't actually until somebody described it as the cost basis that it just clicked for me, right? So yep. There's a different way that it's going to register with everyone. So,
absolutely. And I think one level to this is because we can also look at, you know, who these, we call it cohorts. You could look at the cost basis for the whole market, which is the realized price. The realized price is the cost basis for every unit of BTC. But you could also say, I want to see the cost base of everyone who bought recently. And that's what we call the short-term holder cost basis, the short-term holder realized price. What about people who've been around for a long time, long-term holders? So you can layer in these extra levels of, well, whose cost basis is it? And there's a realized price for all these different components. So, you know, it helps you understand sensitivity because, and I would challenge people, just have a think. Do you remember what your cost basis was from 2 years ago? I find that I have to go back and check my spreadsheet and my records. Do I know what my cost basis was when I DCA'd last Wednesday? I'm much more aware of that. So that like psychological awareness is why this price stamping is useful. Because the sooner that, or the more recently a coin moved, the more in tune we are with that price and the more likely we are to respond. You're more likely to panic sell or panic take profits if the market rallies after you've just bought, right? If you just bought and it sells off, you're more likely to do something. I'm not thinking about the coins I bought 2 years ago. I don't care. I don't even know what they bought them at, right? So it's a whole different psychological ball game.
That's right. So then the other metric that sits really at the fundamental, it's just a derivative of realized price and market price. And that's MVRV. You describe it as the average unrealized profit or loss held by the market. And that really is just, it's the ratio of the market price to the realized price. And you have this great little description of areas of MVRV. Higher values means everyone is happy. Lower values mean folks are sad. And a value of 1.0 is the break-even level. I mean, it's just a great way to think of it. High is good because people are in profit. The exchange price is higher than your custody price. So if the custody price is the price at which you put it into your hard wallet or your whatever cold storage method or custody solution that you choose, that happened at a price. Now there's a price on the screen. The ratio between the screen price and the price at which you custodied is the MVRV. When it's high, people are happy. When it's low, people are sad. And when it's 1.0, it's the break-even. So give people your explanation, your overall understanding of MVRV.
Yeah, no, I think that's the right way to think about it. It is the unrealized profit multiple. Now, that can also mean people are in loss because your multiple could be less than one. But it is essentially showing you how in the money the market is, right? So if the average cost basis for every coin in the supply was $10,000 and prices at $20,000, then the average person, the average coin is up 2x, right? So if MVRV is 2, it actually means everyone's holding a 100% profit because you've got your cost basis as 1 and then plus another one is your in profit. So this is really powerful for a few reasons. And really, this is kind of the way that I've approached and attacked on-chain data for a long time. And I think Bitcoin is very special because it's so organic that we get to see human psychology in its almost most raw form in markets. We get to visualize it and see it. When MVRV goes up, you're right that everyone is happy. But you have to remember that markets are a game of chicken. So just imagine for a second that Bitcoin went to $1 million tomorrow. Right. And everybody who woke up was like, oh, I'm a diamond handed hodler. I'm not going anywhere. Well, you know for a fact that some guy is going to be like, oh, yeah, but $1 million is a big number. So someone's going to take profit. And everyone knows that someone's going to take profit. So whilst there are diamond handed hodlers and there are people who, you know, MVRV goes to 3, they're up 200%. And they're like, I'm waiting here for, you know, give me $1 million. I'm not touching it. Some other guy goes, 250K. Yeah, I'll take it. So the higher that MVRV goes, the better sentiment is, the happier people are, but also the higher the probability that people are going to take those profits. So that creates the sell side pressure. And you've got to remember that human beings respond to profit and loss. Likewise, at very low MVRVs, this is basically when we're getting into bear market territory, the diamond hands actually have a lot more of a role here because they aren't going anywhere. They can sustain 85% drawdowns because they believe in this thing and more likely than not, they're buying more coins. So there's a pain threshold. And normally we get to MVRVs like 0.8, sometimes 0.7. This is like a level of pain where the average guy is gone. The speculators are out and it's only the hardcore. It's like a pain threshold that the hodlers can handle, but no one else can. And when you get to those levels, you're probably very close to seller exhaustion. So there's a whole lot of different mechanics here. You can also look at very sharp changes in MVRV. So let's say we consolidate like we have recently. You consolidate for 2 months. Price only has to go a little bit above their cost basis and coins go from in loss to in profit. And you'll see very sharp changes, right? And that's when lots and lots of cost bases, lots of coins have been acquired or disposed of because they're one and the same, at a very certain price level. And suddenly the market is very sensitive to market movements around there. You've got a lot of people who are like, hey, my most recent buy was somewhere up here. If price goes up, I'm going to feel very happy very quickly. If it goes down, I'm going to feel very sad very quickly. And that's what can precipitate real inflection points. Bull markets end at the most euphoric day. Everyone's having a great day. MVRV is ripping higher. Everyone buys high. Market sells off. Suddenly, lots of people feel not so good. And that's what creates that panic. So you can get these inflection points as well by looking at how MVRV trades.
Yes. And that's, you know, I want people to go check out Chek's work because when we give you the overview of realized price and MVRV, he's looking at that dynamic, but on a very specific level as in addition to the aggregate level. So he's looking at short-term, long-term. He's looking at different cohorts of buyers and you know, breaking down all that data. So I want people to go check out your work. I'm going to put a chart on the screen here for people. This is the three metrics we've been discussing. Check, this is our TBL chart here. I know you've seen our version of this with Bitcoin's price in orange, the realized price in purple, and then a MVRV ratio in green here for you guys to show you that over the last two halving cycles, what have we seen? We've seen the price go and extend way beyond the realized price, right? That's when the orange line goes way above the purple line. And then what happens to the ratio? That ratio is higher in that scenario because the multiple, like Chek was saying, the multiple of what the price is to your custody price, your realized price, your cost basis is significantly high. That causes people to want to take profits and one thing leads to another and we get a Bitcoin crash. The crashes end over a long period of time when the realized price now is above the market price. Right. And so the MVRV goes below one, that the network is at an aggregate loss. And that's what puts in the bottom. So I want to just give people that picture. And then I want to go right away to the next chart, which is your very interesting picturing of realized price in three different stages. So walk us through the red bearish stage, the blue consolidation stage, and the green acceleration stage. And just simplify it for people, because like you said, realized price is the holy grail of on-chain metrics. So you've broken it down into colors. Explain it to us.
Yeah, absolutely. So going back to that original point about price stamping. So one guy's profit is another guy's capital inflow, right? Bitcoin is seeing money coming in. And historically speaking, Bitcoin really goes through three phases. Bull markets is when people are taking profits. Coins are being revalued from a bear market level up to a mid bull, and then all the way up to the top of a bull. Coins are getting revalued higher. Someone else is coming in with more money to buy those coins. So Bitcoin sees these like almost vertical, these periods of just like vertical realized cap increase. Capital's coming in, everyone's happy, MVRB is getting better. But what then happens, right, is you reach this inflection point where the top gets put in, the market starts to slow down. And generally speaking, the hodlers, for whatever reason, they're very, very good. They seem to stop their profit taking very close to the cyclical top, because essentially they see that liquidity dies away. They've taken the profits they wanted to take. The market sells off. For whatever reason, people stop taking profits fairly quickly after the top gets put in. And what generally happens is you've also got lots of people who bought high. And what creates a bear market? When too many people buy too many coins at too high of a price. And when they finally realize, I call it the shot across the bow, there's like that first sell-off where you've got correction, correction, correction. Oh, that was nasty. And you can see it in a lot of on-chain metrics. It just shows too many people are now trapped. And that trapped behavior creates and precipitates the sentiment that creates a bear. Now, during that period of time, all those people who bought high are now starting to sell lower and lower. And they're just like, you know, they get any kind of recovery bounce. Like, look, it's 10% below my cost basis. That's fine. I'll take it. Give me my money back. I want to get out. And what happens is that the coins get revalued from a high price down to a lower one. So you get realized losses that dominate. So what happens is the realized cap, which was previously increasing during the acceleration phase, it then actually slows down and it starts to trade plateau or sideways, or actually starts to trade lower. Because there's still some people taking profit, which kind of offsets the losses. But then we finally get to the capitulation point. If you've been around for a while, this was the December 2018 bottom. This is the FTX bottom. These are those points when like it is real dire and it feels bad. Lots of people who've been, and in fact, lots of people buy the top and they survive. We call them the single cycle hodlers. They hang in there. They're holding on. Don't worry. I believe in this Bitcoin thing. And then it finally just that final puke and they go, that's it. I'm done. I'm out. I'm walking away. And strange enough, everyone does this at the exact same time. And that's what you get, the final capitulation flush. So during that time, realized cap actually can seriously decline, certainly on a relative scale. But remember that every seller is matched with a buyer. So all those people who are capitulating, who are they selling to? Well, they're selling to people who actually do believe that Bitcoin's kind of come back. And they're the ones who did stick around and they're buying and stacking sat to the bottom, the hodlers who put the floor in. Now, what happens is all those coins go from 60,000, 50,000 down to 15, 16. That's a much more favorable cost basis. Price starts to find a level, starts to climb higher. And all those people who were in loss suddenly are like, hey, my personal MVRV is going up. I'm feeling much better. I'm going to keep buying. And what happens is you get the sentiment slowly turn around. So what happens is that we generally get in 2023, I'd probably consider to be this phase, the recovery. And it's slow, it's steady, it's hodlers only. There's no news, there's no new people coming in, but there is a gradual increase, capital starting to flow back in. And then generally speaking, you get to like, there is another inflection point where things steepen. And for us, this was around October last year. ETFs obviously is another layer, but the anticipation of and the launch of the ETFs, you get this serious uptick. New money starts coming in, capital starts coming in. And capital coming in also means that bigger holders are like, well, if I need to exit some portion of my chips, I need a big amount of buyers, right, to actually unload some of these coins and take those profits. So hodlers generally wait for the right liquidity environments. They need enough demand. They don't want to nuke the price. They just want to distribute into the new inflows, right? New capital inflows. So it kind of goes through these different phases, but the gradient, the real big takeaway, the gradient of the realized cap in up or down is telling you the strength of the capital inflows and outflows. And that's really the core takeaway. It's all about how strong is that capital inflow. And we can obviously use that to ascertain, is the market healthy? Are we growing? Are we deteriorating? Where are we?
And readers of the Bitcoin Layer will be very familiar with realized price going parabolic in over the last several months. And that has been off the back of capital inflows. So let's shift right in now to your views on Bitcoin, your on-chain analysis, your latest analysis. Bitcoin has retaken $70,000. Let's start here with ETF capital coming back into Bitcoin. We had this consolidation phase, and now the numbers appear to be popping. So give us your thoughts.
Yeah, absolutely. So this has been a fantastic correction. And so really, Check on Chain started. We started writing in April. We've just passed our first month. So pretty much everything we've done so far for our subscribers has been within this correction. And I've joked about it before, but I think if we look forward 5 years, you'll see in my analysis, I do a video report, you'll see that I often look back and like, it looks a lot like this correction, or this is how it looked back then. I'm pretty sure we'll be looking at this correction in 5 years' time, if I'm still doing this. We'll be looking back at this correction, be like, see this? This is a textbook bull market correction. You actually couldn't ask for a more structured, beautifully built everything. Like literally everything that you wanted to see. We got a nice retest of the short-term holder cost basis. We got people who bought high at 70K get flushed out low. There was all these different components that we've explored it through this process that really just suggest it was textbook. You couldn't ask for more conditions to be hit. That is exactly what you want to see during a correction. So overall, very structured, very healthy. I think that the market where we currently stand is actually in a very, very good position. But the main thing that we had a piece called Expecting Chop Solidation. And I'm kind of torn. I'm somewhere between like a 50-50 odds in terms of we're probably going to chop around for weeks to months. Because I just think that the last 18 months have been extraordinary. We've come from 16K at FTX to 71 or 73, and we've barely had a 20% correction. So by and large, it takes time to digest big moves like that. So I'm partway between expecting like weeks to months of just chopping around sideways. And the other one is that we could just as likely pop to an all-time high in the next week. So I'm really holding both of these views. I think they're both equally likely. What I really did explore is this concept of top heaviness, because during this correction, we had a lot of metrics that kind of signaled the euphoria zone, like a peak, a top. And the question is, did we actually have the conditions to put all those people in loss? And the answer is a lot of ETFs bought, but most of them are below 60K. So interestingly enough, even though we had about 2/3 of all short-term holders go into a loss at the bottom of the correction, most of them had a cost basis at like 60K, 62K. So they were in loss, but not by much. And that's the big difference, right? They were underwater, but you know, if you're down 5%, it's very different to being down 20%. It's kind of a different psychological game. And the final piece of the puzzle that we would like within this context, the ETFs are a great vector for like, what's the demand looking like? Because what go in the ETF is actually very similar to what happens on the spot in futures. They all speak the same language. And basically, why we were saying expecting chop solidation or, you know, sideways, we hadn't seen that second wave of demand. There's no question that the wave of demand we saw when the ETFs went live was extraordinary, historic, massive. The ETFs, by my calculations, account for about 30%. The other 70% is actually just the rest of the classic Bitcoin spot market. So we have this like massive wave of demand. It takes time for the second wave to show up. Now, we've started to see a bit of inflow, but whether it's enough for us to actually continue and move on to the next leg, it does always remain to be seen. But I also wouldn't be surprised if we just go through a bit of chop, right? We see inflows and it goes back to outflows or it softens. These kind of things wouldn't surprise me, but simultaneously, if we've saw 4 weeks of outflows, we've now got 2 weeks of inflows, and those inflows more than account for all the outflows. So by and large, this could also be the first innings of that second wave of demand. One line I've been saying quite a bit, in a bear market, we have a pretty good idea of demand. We understand the hodlers. We know what they do. We don't know how many people are going to sell. We don't know the supply. In a bull market, it's actually the opposite. We have no idea what the demand looks like tomorrow, but we have a pretty good idea what the long-term holders do to sell. So we know more about the supply side, less about the demand side. And that demand side is the key variable that we just can't even begin to imagine what tomorrow looks like.
Yes, it's a very interesting point, because when you say that, it makes me think about the demand for Bitcoin that exists around the world, because it is neutral money, having nothing to do with a trade or what the on-chain metrics speak. So that, and I know you agree with that, that's what underpins the market. It has to be the incremental person that comes in and says, I value this technology. I want to store my capital in it, because you can't do much with Bitcoin in terms of an investor other than hold it. You can buy it and use it, but then you don't have it anymore. So Chek, let's ask you about this euphoria zone chart that you have. We have euphoria zones popping up in 2017, then again in 2021. We had our first euphoria zone of this bull market, but it doesn't mean that the bull market is over. So walk us through. I know that you've presented this chart before. So just walk us through your take on the latest bump up against one standard deviation above the mean.
Yeah, so I think this is a really cool chart. Very often when we're looking at on-chain data, we'll hit a certain level, right? MVRV plus one standard deviation, right? Which is just looking for some kind of statistical change from the long-term mean. Almost always, if you look at it from a technical analysis perspective, you're like, oh, that's also the 61.8 Fibonacci, or that's also this moving average. These things all align, because at the end of the day, it's human beings. We are making collective decisions. And the one thing that is predictable about markets is that human beings will do the same thing when given the same stimulus. The asset changes, market conditions change, but that's why price charts in the 1920s look just like they do right now, because we as humans, our brain is doing the exact same thing. So what this chart is looking at, the green zones, is what I call the euphoria zone. And historically speaking, Bitcoin's got these different phase shifts that it goes through. Breaking to a new all-time high is the boundary between like excitement or enthusiasm and euphoria. And euphoria is very different. Long-term holders take a lot more profit. The market is literally in price discovery. There's a lot more unknowns in terms of demand, right? Eventually it ends when everyone's like, there is no ceiling. Price goes up forever. Of course, that's usually when it's over. But the euphoria zone has a lot of different characteristics. So the green zones is just simply looking at when we're setting new all-time highs on a regular basis, right? So it's more from a technical standpoint, price discovery. Strangely enough, MVRV is almost always at, we're at a one standard deviation from its mean, which means that people are in a statistically meaningful amount of profit, right? That also means people start to take those profits. So this is a nice grounding anchor to say, like, the reason why Bitcoin bumps its head and doesn't just like punch straight through and go immediately to a million is because people sell, because they're in enough, their portfolio is green enough that they start to take chips off the table. Now, what that does is it puts coins from a low cost basis to a high one. The market's got to work through and digest that. And then if there's enough demand side to absorb those coins, we kind of build a new foundation, and then away we go again. MVRV resets, we get this kind of cooling down effect. And where we are at the moment, we've seen that reset. A lot of coins have gone from 15K, 20K, 40K, up to 60. That's kind of like the new ground floor. And that's a foundation from where the market's now trying to lift itself back off again. So it's just one of those things where, like, the reason why markets pause is because people take profits. Why do they take profit? Because enough people were in the green. And it's just like all these things kind of speak the same language. It's fascinating.
Yes, absolutely. And so in the euphoria zone, this is when the price is breaking to all-time highs. It lines up with MVRV spiking, of course. And then that is the trigger itself for the selling. Not that the ratio is high, but that the holders themselves are in a material profit and decide to hit the market back. So now talk to us about, when are we going to get the, I know you said you're 50-50 between, are we going to chop for another several months or just break to new all-time highs? So we know your take on whether we'll get another green bar here. It's a quite 50-50 for you there. But then tell me about the realized price itself. Let's strip away MVRV. Realized price itself is still on a charge. I was just looking at the daily change. So what does that tell you? Are we still in this, are we still in the acceleration phase to you? What does it tell you that that realized price is still moving up?
Yeah. So as the realized price or the realized cap is climbing, if we go back to the fundamentals of what that means, coins that were last moved cheaply are now moving at a more expensive price. In other words, somebody else is coming in with more capital. And that's why when we go back to that ETF chart, let's think about the ETF as one sector of the demand side. Someone from the on-chain world who bought at 20K, spending their coins, revaluing from there to 70, someone in the ETF is hitting the buy button. So the fact that realized cap is climbing, that's what I love about markets. What makes them so fascinating? You have to hold two opinions at the same time, and they're perfectly at odds with each other. On one side, that is telling me that capital is still flowing in. And when I just very, very broadly say capital is flowing in and we're at all-time high, I mean, that's good. That's exactly what you want to see. The other side of the equation is that also means somebody is selling. And at some point in time, that sell side will put this bull market to bed because it's nothing goes up forever. So if we take both of those views at the same time, that's why I then layer in what else is the market doing. So we've seen this skyrocket of realized cap. We've seen capital inflows. We've seen profit taking to an enormous extent, and we still haven't given back 20%. That tells me something about the demand side. It's extremely healthy. It looks very robust. We just haven't given back as much as you would expect considering the amount of sell side. Overall, if I just take the broad picture view, I'm relatively constructive because of all of these components. We've got capital inflows, profits are getting taken, but the market is absorbing it. All of those are a good sign.
Yes, we've talked about on our last show, we spent the whole show dedicated to the theme of compressed volatility. So, and that show is still extremely relevant. It wasn't that long. It's only a few weeks ago that we did that show. So I would recommend people go check out our last episode with Checkmate on compressed volatility. We'll provide you guys the link for that, of course. Now, Check, the last two charts complement each other, and they go with what you've been saying, that this is a textbook bull market correction and something, and you just love to see it right now. So I want to get your just sense of why these are things that you love to see. The first chart here is Bitcoin short-term holder supply and loss. And you note here that the supply and loss, 322,000 Bitcoin out of 4.85 million at 6.6% level. So why did you flag that level and walk us through that, please?
Yeah, so the very first piece we did over at Check and Chain was called Is the Bitcoin Market Top Heavy? And this is a concept that I started exploring a couple of years ago, but really have had what I love is that the market gives me an opportunity to like, okay, I'm trying to see whether too many people bought too many coins at too high of a price, because that's what creates a bear. So I'm like, okay, that's my canvas. I want to go and find and see whether that is true. So because we're at all-time high, short-term holders are the most important cohort, because if you're a long-term holder, there's basically none of them that are underwater. They're all in the green. So in that regard, they're kind of a single dimensional. They're just taking profits. So let's put them in a bucket over there. They're purely sell side. We'll deal with them later on. So the short-term holders are the people who just bought.
I just want to interrupt you one second to tell people that when you're looking at this chart here, when we had our Bitcoin price and our realized price, and you see these huge gaps, that's the whole network. Now we're zooming in to the short term, which I believe, Check, it's a 9 month,
5 months,
5 months cutoff. Okay. So this is the 5 month and under cohort and what their realized price is. So sorry to interrupt. Yep.
No, that's all right. So the other way to think about this, because we're in what, back end of May, everyone in short-term holder has bought from 2024 onwards, right? So we're talking about this year's buyers. And that's going to be some portion of people down there at 44K when the ETF's launched, and most of them are going to be up here at 60 plus. So the thing we're trying to work out is, do we have a top-heavy market? Lots of people who just bought, psychologically, they're thinking, okay, my cost basis is 2 days ago, 4 days ago, 2 weeks ago. I'm concerned if the price sells off below me, because that is what creates the panic sell. And by the way, a lot of these people are ETFs, and they could be the first time they've ever bought Bitcoin. So they could be very sensitive. They're not used to the volatility. So that's the concept. Top heaviness is when you've got that condition, too many people trapped at a high price. Now, what we're looking at in that chart is the amount of supply in orange is by the total short-term holder volume, as you said, 4.85 million coins. And the red line is basically looking at how many of those coins were acquired at a cost basis above or below the price, right? Coins in loss. Now, when we sold off down to 57K, the bottom of that recent correction, two-thirds of all short-term supply was underwater. Now, I actually took a new lesson as I was exploring this concept. I learned something else myself during this process. There's two types of ways we can measure how underwater somebody is. Binary, you're either in or out of profit, right? Your coin is either above or below, one or the other. But what happens if it's below? In this case, two-thirds of all coins are below, right? They're underwater. But what if they're only below by 1 cent? That's very different to being below by like 20%, right? It's a different magnitude. So when we look at it in terms of the amount of coins in loss, it was two-thirds, and you're like, okay, we're getting close to a top-heavy type condition. But then the next step is to go, well, by how much? And then you can look at the unrealized loss, aka if here's your cost basis, how far below did the price fall, right? If it's only just hovering below, then yeah, who cares about 1% or 2%? If it's 10%, 20%, 30%, you start actually scaring people. So when you look at how the magnitude of how below everyone was, it just wasn't significant. In fact, you actually have to squint on the chart to see it. So in that regard, it looks like every previous bull market correction. You tested people, you tested their resolve, but not enough to create this like bear market fear and like break sentiment. It wasn't sentiment breaking. It was enough to test. It was enough to shake out the weakest of the hands, but it wasn't enough to just completely shatter sentiment. If people are around in the last cycle, you probably actually remember this, that May sell-off in 2021. So we had Coinbase direct listing and we just went from 60K to 29 in like a week. That was what broke sentiment. Yes, we all-time high after that, but sentiment was absolutely shattered and we never recovered. That's how we get to FTX. So there's a lot of other mechanics there, but that was just like it was it looked different. It looked really angry. We didn't see that in this cycle. It was enough of a test, but not enough to shatter sentiment.
That May 2021 crash was something very unique because the price recaptured an all-time high, but barely, and it preceded the move down toward the FTX washout. Give us some more thoughts.
My take there is I actually think that we all-time high in a bear market. I've held that position for a long time. It's a super weird concept to get your head around. At some point, it's in my list of things to write about why that was a false top. But I think we all-time high in a bear market back then in November.
Excellent. Now, check the last chart is we're going to go from short-term holder loss to the short-term holder in profit, supply that's in profit. And what is the signal that you're taking from this pop from 33 to 93%?
Yes. So in the exact same way that as the market sells off, we can see people go from happy in profit to not so happy in loss, right? We can kind of watch that the lower the price goes, the more people are going to cascade into that level. Now, what I like about on-chain data is that what we see in a correction is actually a miniature bear market. Like at a small scale, all the same mechanics that creates the floor of a full-scale bear is actually what happens. It sets the floor of a correction. A bunch of people buy high, price sells off, they panic and they go, oh no, I'm wrong, and they sell. And they all tend to capitulate near the actual bottom. And what happens then is just the same way as we watch coins go into loss on the way down, we've then reversed it. You can see when all those coins go back into profit because someone else now owns them. They've changed hands. A hodler who has a bit more conviction and resolve has stepped in at 60K and 57K and bought that dip. So the coins have gone from a speculator at 73 to a hodler at 61. And now you've got a reshaping of the overall cost basis of the market. You've got a healthier condition. People are in a better financial position. They're more able to hodl. So as the market, as you said, we've gone from like 33% of all short-term coins in profit to 93. So you've basically recovered all of those people. They're now in the green and they're going to be much more capable, let's call it. Psychologically, they're not stressed, right? Now, of course, if we sell back down again, they'll go back into stress and we can see that play out again. But as it stands, all those people who bought the dip have been rewarded for buying the dip, right? And you know, if we take our just very simple brain hardware, people are being conditioned and trained to buy the dip. They bought their cost basis. They bought the short-term holder cost basis. They've been rewarded because we went straight back to all-time high. It reinforces that buy the dip behavior. Eventually, they're going to buy the dip, but it won't be a dip. It'll be a bear. That'll happen. But this so far doesn't look like it's bear market material as it stands.
Now, when we had you last on, I know that a couple light bulbs went off, and for me, and you're always teaching me so much, the last one was about this concept of compressed volatility and how it's represented across the different metrics. So from ETF metrics to futures metrics to the on-chain metrics themselves, we're seeing compressed volatility. The short-term holders in profit dipping and then popping back up is another sign of more capital just prepared to support or come in, just more compressed volatility. So if you'll allow me my breakthrough today after talking to you, and then I'll let you respond, you can let me know. First of all, it's wildly bullish. I can't hide it. The fact that Bitcoin cannot see this 25, 30, 35% drawdown that we're so used to in past markets. I think about this May 2021 bear market that you just talked about. This is actually what triggered it. And I look here that this metric falls down all the way to zero. It, essentially, every single person that's come into the market from a short-term perspective is in a loss after May 2021 crash. The fact that we don't have anything close to that this time around is the evidence of the capital that's there to support. Then when you overlay that with the demand for a neutral money, a digital neutral money that's absent of banking liabilities and central bank, so it's basically your hedge against monetary inflation, you know, per the classical definition of the word, that altogether, it just makes me very bullish on where this current bull market, the room that it has to run.
Yep. No, that's exactly right. And interestingly enough, August last year, you may remember it, we were at 29K and it was super quiet. Like in terms of volatility, there was absolutely nothing happening. It was one of the quietest days in Bitcoin's history. And I actually wrote a report back then. I did it on the derivatives one. And I said, derivatives are pricing in that Bitcoin is going to be a stable coin forever. I'm like, that's either Bitcoin is now a stable coin or volatility is coming in hot. And strangely enough, the market still did nothing. And I had enough time to write a second report. I'm like, oh man, I just wrote about like the market needs to do something. So I did it from the on-chain perspective and told how the on-chain story tells you that volatility is coming or we're in a brand new world. And of course, volatility was incoming. We went from 29 to 26, like instantly. And that condition you just said where everyone went into a loss happened. So strangely enough, August last year, we actually had a condition that I would call top heavy. We had all of the holders go into a loss. And yet the price went to 26 and then just went sideways. All the way into September, started climbing in October, and then we just mooned. So just to reinforce that point, not only have we like tested the resolve of holders during this correction, we tested it back in August. We should have gone into a miniature bear market, like a 2019 style market. And we didn't. We went sideways and up. We still haven't got a 20% correction. And I just put all of these pieces of the puzzle together and I go, what are the bears talking about, right? Whilst in the on-chain world, I'm not talking about rates. I'm not talking about why Bitcoin is a clever asset. I'm not talking about the JGB curve. I'm aware of all those things, but Bitcoin is telling me, based on just what's going on inside it, that holders are stepping in, they're buying the dip, that it looks like a bull market, right? It resembles a bull. I have certain conditions that will tell me, okay, this is a regime shift and we're always on the lookout for those things. But so far, if you were going to describe, if you asked bear market check, right, at 15K, what should a bull market correction look like? I would have painted this picture and gone, it probably looks something like this.
Checkmate, thank you so much for joining us once again. Check on chain. Make sure to go check out his work. Tell people where they can find it.
Thanks, Nick. Yeah, so checkonchain.com is our kind of landing site, but newsletter at checkonchain.com. And essentially, we do two pieces of market analysis a week. And we're at the moment building out our masterclass. So you mentioned the realized cap and MVRV. A lot of the charts are from that. We're slowly stepping our readers through like all the foundational pieces, MVRV, SOPA, and understanding what these components of our analysis are. And you mentioned before, it's all about repetition, right? You kind of go over the same topics on a regular basis. And over time, you'll absorb 5% each time. And then eventually, the stories start to make sense. And you're like, okay, I can actually see people buying dips. I can see people selling rips. And we start to just, you know, try and navigate. Our tagline is, we're your Bitcoin personal trainer. Because volatility is hard. Bitcoin moves. It moves hard and fast. And it opens up questions. You go, why did that happen? And understanding why, I think, is a really useful tool for the hodler to navigate through. When you know why something happens, it just gives you that confidence to hodl on.
Well, I appreciate you being my teacher here in this on-chain world, and we'll definitely have you back on. Please go check out Chek's work, and we'll catch you guys next time.
Thanks, Nick. Cheers.
The Bitcoin Layer is proud to be sponsored by River. River.com/TBL for that special offer. And the reason that we love River at the Bitcoin Layer is that they put your education first. River.com/learn to understand what Bitcoin is, the fundamentals. Also, how to get your Bitcoin off the exchange into your own custody solution. You can use river.com/learn for all of that information. Go check them out today.